When the sisters are away, the bastards will play. It's time for the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Episode 183. It's a moon poof kind of day.
Bastards and wenches, please rise for the Boston National Anthem.
Another episode of the Boston Bass Brigade. I am King Baby Duck. As some people might know, Blawanik is still on vacation in San Diego, so I'm here in my little kingdom all alone with no one here. Wait, what's this? Why, it looks like I have some special guests here on my program. First off, joining me from Anime Jam Sessions. You might see him walking around conventions dressed up as Luigi and other kick-ass characters. Please welcome the one and only Mr. DJ Ranma Satome.
Am I getting paid for this? My bookie said I was getting paid for this.
You're getting paid in cookies.
Does that mean I have to travel to the dark side, huh?
It's the mid-level, I think.
We can deal. We can work.
A yin and yang sort of setup here at the Boston Bass Brigade.
I think we can work with that.
And secondly is a woman who you might have seen do some amazing cosplay work. You might have seen her work on Scarlet Rhapsody, her website. Please welcome Scarlet Prickyar.
Hey, what's up? Well, if we're being paid in cookies, I request a box of Thin Mints. Done.
Thin Mints? No. We go with the good stuff. We get those Girl Scout peanut butter cookies.
The Tagalogs or whatever it's called, Tagalongs.
Yeah,
I forgot.
Yeah.
They always change up their names every year. I'm more of a Thin Mints person. I go very much with the crowd on this one.
Yeah. So first of all, for people who don't know, DJ Ranma, why don't you explain to our listeners what Anime Jam Session is all about?
Long story short, Anime Jam Session is just me with a couple of friends just ranting and raving about the state of the anime and cosplay fandom. But seriously, what we do is we get together every week, we discuss some topics about anime, and we just run with it and see where we go. And if I see anything interesting on Facebook, we bring it up and we kind of discuss it. We're sort of like keeping it real, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely, and it's great to have a great anime podcast out there that's doing such a great job with getting some good anime out, great anime out to the people, and not to mention, some anime that you should tell people not to watch as well.
Yeah, we kind of went on a tangent about Aku no Hana about 2-3 weeks ago. We were like, the manga is good, but the anime, not so much.
That's the one where they did the whole, motion capture with the real people, correct? Animated it on top of film.
Rotoscoping.
Rotoscoping.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, that one looks like it's cool that they're going the route with a Scanner Darkly, and what's the other one that that director did? Waking Life. It's cool that they're doing that, but for them to not be in that sort of style that the manga's in, it's just a mess.
I agree. I mean, looking at the animation, my first thought was, wow, looks like stuff Satoshi Kon would do, but I don't think he would go to this level. Because the art style just kind of reminds me of his work.
Exactly. Now, before we go into anime, Scarlet, same question for you. Please explain to everybody what Scarlet Rhapsody is all about.
Well, that's a really good question. Well, primarily we do anime convention reports. We've also recently expanded into doing video game conventions and comic conventions. In fact, our Western division is actually covering Long Beach Comic Con right now. So shout out to them. So we essentially do reviews for conventions, what's great, what's not so great, just tips, survival tips, like where to eat, like what the best panels were, get some honor interviews. We just essentially like just cover a lot of anime conventions and comic book conventions. The site has expanded to like a lot of different things now. This summer, we're actually integrating a photo shoot section because I recently just acquired someone new on our team who will be handling cosplay photo shoots. And the guys on our team, they're doing a sports podcast from the perspective of nerds. So, yeah, that's what we're all about.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned that you started doing video game conventions. Was PAX East your first one?
It was the first one that I covered. We had our team, members of our team, cover E3 in the past before with my brother's website. So they kind of piggybacked on them, and they did something for us while they were also doing something for my brother's website, the now-defunct Control-Alt-Kill. So we covered video game conventions before, but PAX East was the first video game event that I personally covered.
And how did you enjoy it this year?
Oh, I enjoyed PAX East. I'm more of a casual gamer. Right as of right now, this podcast recording, I'm downloading some new Sims games. So I love Sims. I have like this obsession with Sims, but I really enjoyed PAX East. I thought it was a really chill event. I liked the fact that a lot of the attendees were like close in my age, so you didn't have like the flock of fandom of Homestuck like trying to ruin your day. But it was a lot of fun.
Let's not get into that.
What?
Homestuck. Let's not get
then
into
let's that. Move forward.
Yes.
So, I know you do a lot of cosplay as well. That's like one of your big fortes on the website. And you do a lot of stuff for Idolmaster. Like, you do a lot of cosplay for that.
Mm-hmm. In fact, like, just as I was getting ready for the podcast, I was working on finishing up my latest Azusa cosplay for Anime Boston. I was just finishing up the miniskirt. All I have to do is just add a hem, and it's all done. And, yeah, I love cosplaying from Idolmaster. I think it's a really cute game. I love the whole franchise behind it. I'm just so obsessed with it right now. But I'm pretty sure once the new Sailor Moon anime starts rolling, that's going to be, like, my new convention dealer's hall, like, raid type thing. Like, I got to get everything.
Now, going back to onto Idolmasters, because they just released the iOS video games for that here in America.
Yes.
How pissed off were you when you saw the $55 price tag for them?
It was not so much the price point, because I get that why they have to raise the price a little bit to that part because of all the licensing, because there's like a lot of music involved, a lot of voice actors involved. Like, yeah, I'll save my pennies and just probably grab it for $55 or whatever the hell the price is. But here's the thing. I didn't like the fact that it was only available on the iOS platform. Like, no, you could have had it like for the Vita. You could have had it for the PSN network, the Xbox DLE. You could have had it. Yeah, I mean, like, I just wish it was available more on more platforms other than the iOS, because I'm like, you know what? I'm about to get this Nexus 7, which is an Android-based type thing, and I'm just slowly just moving away from iOS right now and just back to Android and Windows, but I don't know. I'm just one of those people who just thinks that Apple's overrated, but that's just me.
You're talking to the guy who is just surrounded right now by Apple products. I'm looking at my MacBook right here as I'm talking to you. I've got my iPad 2 here with all my notes for today's episode, and I have my iPhone in my pocket.
Meanwhile, I'm sitting here with a Windows laptop, and I'm currently Hackintoshing, so there you go.
Oh, wait. You mean you're doing a reverse boot camp? You're putting Mac onto a Windows?
Yeah, it's possible. Nowadays, as long as you have a decent Intel i3, i5 desktop or laptop that's running all Intel inside, you can put Mac OS on it.
Holy shit.
Yeah, you could tweak some of the files, but it can be done.
That is very interesting. So that means you can run Final Cut Pro on a Windows computer.
True, but if you're running Final Cut Pro, you better, you might as well just run Adobe Premiere as well. So
that's true. That's true.
I'm a Camtasia person.
Camtasia. I've never heard of even. I've never even heard of that one.
It's not very mainstream.
I use ULEAD Video Studio Pro. I got pissed off when I found out that Corel bought the company and started marketing with the software. I'm like, please don't fuck this up. Please don't. But so far, they've been kind of good.
Yeah. That sucks. But, you know, getting back into the whole Idolmaster thing, it's weird how they could charge so much for a little iPhone or iPad game. I know, Scarlett, you mentioned the licensing of music and the voice actors, but there are tons of games on here on the Apple Store, like the Rock Band sort of games that have the licensed music and still cost only like $5.
But this is Japanese music we're talking about. It's like a different set of rules that I don't want to get into and bore the audience with. But I do agree, like, really, it is a high price point. And, there are three different games on it, too. But I didn't really read much into this, but I also wanted to know if the Idolmaster games also included the OAV episode that it comes with. Because that's another deal that has to go through. And like, okay, if it has the episode.
So is it on there or isn't it?
You know what? Because it's not available on the platforms that I use, I just stopped caring, sadly. So I don't have to feel like bad about myself on it. I'm like, I'll just... I'm happy with my PSP game that I got from Video Games New York when they were at Anime Expo, and I paid the import price around $50 for it. I'm like, I'm still happy with it, but
which isn't too bad. $50 for an imported game when you go onto JList and it's like $100 on there.
Yeah, and like it's like the Shiny Festa, which is the iOS release over here. There's three different games of it, so like it's really easy to collect. But I also wonder, I'm not sure if the Shiny Festa games also has this too, but Idolmaster, like one of my favorite parts about it, you can also get like DLC outfits. They usually come out with a set like every month. So that's like another like expense that goes with Idolmaster because the extra DLCs, if you convert to Japanese yen, it comes around about $10 to $12. I'm like, okay, I wonder how much I'm going to get out of this $55 price point. Like, will it give me credit to do any downloadables kind of thing? Or is it going to include some of the downloadables? I don't know. Well, like I said, I just kind of had to, like, slowly had to get myself to just stop caring so I don't have to feel depressed about it.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Maybe we'll we'll change the subject so you don't have to feel sad and everything.
Well, the best way to deal with it so you don't have to worry about it is look at your bills. I mean, you go out, oh, I can't wait to buy this game. And you're like, cable bill is due in a week. Fuck. Go pay the cable bill. I'm like, you know.
You see, I was one of the fortunate ones when, after graduating from college, I didn't have to worry about talking to, you know, the... What do they call those? I'm having a massive brain fart right now. The people who help you pay for college, but then you have to pay for them back.
Student loan people, Sally.
Student loan. Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I did not have to worry about student loans at all.
Lucky.
Yeah.
All right.
And you know, it's not something that I'd like to rub in people's faces, but it's like I hear so many horror stories of people in student loans, and they tell me, and I'm like, I can't relate to these issues because I've never had them, and they try to beat me with an ugly stick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But let us jump into today's episode, and as we have two people who love anime as much as I do, maybe even more than me, let's talk about the state of Japanese anime as it is right now. 2013. DJ Ranma, how do you feel Japanese anime has been this year compared to last?
Kind of, sort of, meh in a way.
Meh?
Yeah, because for the last couple of years, as much as I try to keep up with the fandom and what's new and what's popular, it's like I'm getting drowned in stuff. As soon as I find one title, all right, this is good. This is what everyone's talking about. And then you find out 2 days later, oh, no, everyone's talking about that title over there. And it's like, but this, it's like the trends move a lot faster than I can keep up with.
Yeah. But of course, some of these people are like trending for the wrong reasons. Like, you might be trending about a show because, oh, it's got a great plot line. It's got relatable characters and the story is great. And then they're talking about another anime. Well, what's so better about this anime than this one? And they'll probably say something along the lines of, oh, the girls' boobies are bigger in this anime than they are in this anime.
I think we've kind of gotten past that style of anime because, I mean, much as I keep up with, like, with Gurren Lagann, yes, Yoko is, well
endowed.
Yes, but she walks around with a gun. She's very smart, very intelligent. She doesn't let anybody, you know, piss her off. So she's like the smart chick compared to how some girls that were like that weren't too bright. And we're talking about animes like that from, like, the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like, think of like Mahoshi from Tenchi Muyo. Who?
I had to work with a coworker I aptly named Mahoshi. Whenever she would call my phone, I'd have Mahoshi's set ring as of my ringtone, so I know it was her.
Really?
Yeah.
But with Gurren Lagann, I felt like that was like one of the last great anime series to come out before what I would like to call the drowning of the fan service, which is where there wasn't a lot of, like, I feel like from 2009 to 2000 to early 2012, like, anime seemed more focused on showing hot girls than to actually give us a character that was worth a damn.
I don't know. Panty and Stocking gives us like the best of both worlds. I mean,
you
yes,
see, I like
action, but they gave us two girls that we can actually care about, you know.
You see, I put Panty and Stocking as an exception because that was all parody. That was a huge homage to the cartoons we grew up with in the 90s, like Ren and Stimpy and Invader Zim. And it felt like it was Japan's attempt at making a cartoon for us that grew up during that generation.
I had that same perspective on it, too. Looking at it from that angle, there was a time when Gainax did bring in their animation people to FanimeCon a couple years ago just to research people and see what they liked to work on a new anime. And I assume that whole business trip when Gainax brought their animation people to Fanime was like their quote-unquote research for Panty and Stocking. And then I'm watching a couple of episodes, like, yeah, I get the distinct feeling that this is Gainax's way of making anime for American audiences, because even when you backtrack to 90s titles like Hellsing and Trigun, they actually did better here than in Japan. So,
Cowboy Bebop. Look how awesome that was over here, yet it's barely talked about over in Japan.
And don't forget The Big O.
Which one?
The Big O.
The Big O. So good here that they made a second season just for us.
Yes, Cartoon Network ponied up and looked out for us.
Exactly. Back when Cartoon Network gave a damn about anime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's awesome that they brought back Toonami, but it's not that sort of awesomeness that it was back in, like, the early 2000s when you had, like, Tenchi Muyo and Outlaw Star and Ronin Warriors and some of, like, the best cartoons out there.
It's also not the same feeling as it was, because when Toonami was really big, that's when I was an undergraduate in San Francisco, and you would, like, gather up a bunch of your friends in your dorm room, and you all just, like, gather around together, make popcorn, sneak in some quote-unquote Kool-Aid, and, like, you would just watch anime with your friends all night, and here I am, I'm in my late 20s, and when it gets around to that time, I'm either already out and about doing stuff, or I'm already conked out.
Exactly. Like,
it's a different feeling.
It's like, back then, like, Toonami was on, like, as our pre-preparer of sorts, before we all go out and have fun to the night. And now with Toonami being on at midnight, when we're out partying or going to concerts or just out about town, and it just isn't doesn't give us that same feeling we once did. I mean, we can totally, like, record it with our TiVos and, what is it, the on-demand stuff. But yep. It doesn't have that same feeling as it was when you're watching it live and happening.
You know, you got me reminded of something. Now, this is the part where I'm going to date myself here. I remember BAFF 03. There was a big party going on at Planet Hollywood as part of the convention. A bunch of us went over. And if I'm not mistaken, this is where they were. It was a Viz party, and everyone was psyched to see that Inuyasha was part of the Adult Swim lineup.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
Inuyasha, Yu Yu Hakusho. Oh my god! That when that first started, that was awesome. When they brought Adult Swim to the Saturdays with all the anime, that was so cool.
And nowadays, when you look at Adult Swim, it's like, well, fuck. If I'm good at Adobe Flash, I might as well just do my own half-ass anime, half-ass series. Contact them and make a quick buck.
You see, I don't understand why good shows like Soul Eater aren't watched at all, yet pieces of shit like Tim and Eric's awesome show Great Job are all raved about.
It's cheaper.
It hurts me to watch that show.
I know, but it's cheaper to produce. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, let's take on what Scarlett said about Idolmaster. Let's say that's an anime series now, and licensing for that series for Adult Swim is going to be about, let's say, about $100,000. On the same token, you could take a bunch of people, excuse me, and do a parody series or whatever. Cost, right? About $25,000. Where do you think you're going to go?
They'll go with the cheaper ones, and they'll probably be watched more, and it will make the generation that is watching it stupider than ever before.
Yeah, like, I feel sorry for those who saw the Tim and Eric movie. Yeesh.
You know, I keep seeing it up there, the whole billion-dollar movie on Netflix. You know, I'm like, I like some of the actors that guest in it. Do I dare watch it? And then I remember how much it pained me to watch the show, and I'm like, no, I can't. Like, it's weird. I liked Tom Goes to the Mayor for how stupid that was, but at least it was funny.
That was my last show. After that, I was like, no, I can't do this anymore. Bye.
Yeah. But after that, it was just like terrible. Like, don't. But that's like when they do live action stuff for Adult Swim instead of like the anime stuff, it's shit. But with recent stuff like Super Jail and Metalocalypse, like that shit is awesome when Adult Swim can pull off something like that.
All the Toonami is just like a rehashing of the Midnight Run from back in the day.
Yeah, when they would show Gundam Wing uncut and Dragon Ball Z uncut.
Yep.
I went to bed like at 1:30 or 2 every single day of my school years at high school because of that. It was just so great to see the cartoons as they were without having to worry about shit being cut out.
You got that right.
I know we just kind of got off subject, but with the anime in 2013, has there been a show yet that has stuck out for either of you?
Yes. One particular is Shinjeki. I can't say the Japanese name for my life, so I'll just say the American name. Attack on Titan. You can watch on Crunchyroll or the Funimation channel. It's essentially based off a manga series that I've been reading since New York Comic Con. And the basic story is it's set in a dystopian world, set off into the future. And you have all these naked giant monsters that look like humans, like devour humankind. And it's just essentially a story of survival and how far would you go to protect the people you care about. It's still early on, like in the first couple, five episodes right now, but it's getting really good. And as far as when you compare it to the manga, they add a little bit more in the anime, but it's not filler stuff. It's more character stuff. So you really get to know the characters. And the animation is very well done. They stick with a very nice sepia kind of tone. And it has that philosophical kind of feel to it because it does question how far are you willing to go to protect the people you love, that I really missed from a lot of 80s and 90s anime that I was growing up with that had a more deeper philosophical kind of layer to it. Kind of like, there's Lane, Ghost in a Shell, that kind of feeling toward it. And this is the anime that I recommend to people who aren't necessarily into anime or kind of fell off the anime wave, who also got into anime in the 90s but kind of like just decided to like just leave the anime train. Like, this is a title that I recommend them, and like I said, you can watch a Crunchyroll Funimation.
Yeah, and Crunchyroll is a great website to watch a lot of stuff. And so far, the one anime that has really stood out for me is also on Crunchyroll. It's Kotoro-san, which was only 12 episodes long, but was just, I love the writing in the show. It's one about this girl who can read people's minds, and you would think that if someone could read people's minds, all right, she'll be like the popular one. No, she's practically shunned from society, from her family, and she's just a wreck because of it. And then she comes and meets this guy, Manabe, who definitely has a crush on her. And thanks to his, like, perseverance and his good nature, she starts coming out of her shell, and she starts going to clubs and starts making friends. And the way that the show was produced was, again, I the writing was standout from start to finish. And for him to be able to do a show like this, taken from a yonkoma, not a full-fledged manga, but a four-panel series, and transform it into something that just blew me away. I got speechless when the final episode aired. I am hoping that they could just add more to the show. I'm hoping that they announce or greenlit a second season for this, because it's one of those shows that balances a great amount of comedy and a great amount of drama, especially in the first 10 minutes of that first episode.
Sounds interesting, but the thing is, I wish I had something to submit for 2013, but I haven't yet. I'm still working on a title I was watching from 2012.
Well, what is it? What you're still working on?
Okay. The story behind this is this: I'm on Facebook, and someone posts this video of this anime chick. This girl shaking her butt to this song, some hip-hop song. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. And I'm like, WTF, what is this, Meg? She, in turn, tells me, go watch this series. And I'm like, okay. The series is called Chunyinbo Demo Koigai Shitai. And it's a pretty much sort of like a slice-of-life anime where boy's going into high school. He's trying to forget his junior high years because he totally fucked up because of things he's said and that character he let himself to be. And what happened was, moves into the place. Upstairs neighbor somehow finds stuff about him from his past and looks at him like this as this great god. And she starts to form this magic club based on writings he wrote when he was in junior high. So when they fight, it goes into this alternate reality where it's like these giant magical battles, but when it flips back, they're just fighting with regular weapons. It's sort of like Haruhi Season 2 Endless 8 done right.
Huh. Wait, there's a right way to do that?
Yes, correct way to do Endless 8, because I hate it, Endless 8, with a passion.
That's why I refuse to buy Season 2 of Haruhi Suzumiya, because of Endless 8.
I never finished. I'm like, no, not going to.
When the voice actors say that they hate Endless 8, you know how bad it is.
I never finished it because I was spoiled like midway through. I'm like, really? That's why it is the way it is? Okay, I'm done.
It's like, wait, because of the fucking homework?
I know, that, right?
It's like Groundhog's Day gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm hearing the same thing about this Amnesia show and how bad that one is. It's like, that's another show where this girl keeps losing her memory and has to redo things, but with a different character from this, like, I don't know if it's a dating sim game, or have any of you ever heard of Amnesia at all?
I've heard of Amnesia, but I kept thinking it was a game or something like that, you know? Along lines of like Slender Man or something. That's what I kept hearing.
Well, there's Amnesia the Dark Descent. There is an actual video game called that, but there is an anime called Amnesia. And instead of doing this awesome storyline where they can fit all six characters of this game in, they lazily did it so every time that she loses her memory, she just goes out with a different guy. It doesn't like cross with one another. It's just like they just keep pushing the reset button over and over again in this show.
I'm just picturing somebody standing over their NES and pushing the reset button over and over.
Or on Fairly Odd Parents with the redo button.
Redo! Yep.
There's only been like this year a handful of anime that have really like jumped out at me, or from both 2013 and even going from 2012. Like, I don't know if either of you watch a show called The Pet Girl Sakuraso.
Mm-mm.
Nope.
All right, so this one's really tough for me to really describe. It's about these high school students living under the same roof. Some of them are very talented, and some of them are trying to still find their niche in life. When the show started off, I thought it was going to be really stupid, and it kind of was from the first two episodes. But then, like, when episode three started, you started caring about the characters, you started understanding what they were going through, you were starting to relate to them, and it wound up being one of my favorite shows of 2012, even though it really sucked in the beginning.
Hmm. I do know there's like a couple of titles that's been quite popular. I know Magi has gotten popular. It's like a sleeper hit. And then there's this one called I call it Swimming the Anime, because that's what everybody's been calling.
Oh my God.
I'm like, well, I guess every so often there's a sports anime that gets popular. I mean, like, you had Slam Dunk, you had Prince of Tennis, you had that football one that came up
by ICL 21.
Yeah.
Which, I hated the English dub theme song. It sounded like Jane's Addiction on crack.
It could have been worse. It could have been, the opening theme could have been redone by Tokyo Pop.
Oh.
Which is sad because I love Real Big Fish. If this is the one you're talking about.
No. What I mean is, when Tokyo Pop first got the license to Initial D.
Oh, yeah.
Hi. So they decided to redux the opening theme. And people don't believe me until I grab the DVD off my shelf and I pop it in.
Yeah, I remember that. That was bad.
Apparently, they couldn't get the licensing to the original Eurobeat from Avex, so this is what happened. Yeah.
So they just got a bunch of guys together, snorted a bunch of coke, and this is what came out from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you get Miss Leary and Motley Crue. Thank you very much, good sir.
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad that we've gotten past the whole English dubbing of songs. I think the last anime that did it, and it was a really bad job, was Ouran High School Host Club.
Funny you should mention that. On this week's podcast, we talked about badly dubbed anime themes. That was on the list.
It was really bad, and it's weird because I like Christine Saw. I think she's a very talented singer, but I feel like that this wasn't the best route for her to get her name out there.
May I have permission to rant right now?
Yes. Rant away, DJ Ron Masatome.
I respect Christine Saw on the Anime Tunes album she did with Kasuhiko Janai.
Yes. Yeah, DJ yeah. Janai, right?
I respect her for that. But everything else she's done musical-wise, no, I don't like it. Like, when she did Real Emotion, I'm sitting there on the train listening to this mix playlist I put together. It comes up, and I'm like, what is this? I've heard the Kota Kumi version several times. I've heard the Jade from Sweetbox version several times. I'm listening to this, and I'm like, no. And for like 2 weeks on my live journal, me and a friend were badgering back and forth, flaming each other on this. I will say how bad it was, and he was white knighting her. I'm like, uh-uh.
You see, here's the thing about Christine Sai is she's good when she does her original stuff. She's terrible when she does the covers.
So that explains everything.
Yes.
The only English version I've heard of the Oran theme is the Christina V version, and that was pretty all right.
Wait, there's a Christina V version of Sakura Kiss?
If you listen...
Yes, early in Christina V's day, she actually did some of her own English covers of anime opening songs, and I have her... You can find her Oran cover on YouTube easily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll have to take a look at that. I'm so glad that these days that a lot of these... companies are just now ponying up the actual theme song so they don't have to worry about butchering stuff. I mean, I think people got scared of doing English dub theme songs. Not before the whole Oron thing, I think during the whole One Piece on 4Kids fiasco. I mean, seriously, what the fuck does rap have to do with pirates?
You never heard of Captain Dan and
the Scurvy Crew. It's all about the booty. Shiver me timbers. That's the only thing. I loved Captain Dan and Scurvy Crew. That's an awesome niche. They should have got him to do the theme song for One Piece. They shouldn't have gotten any yo-yo-yo gangster rap type of stuff, man. No.
I can understand why they changed it. I mean, before we get into this, I would like to say, when it comes to dubbing anime songs, no one did it better than Pioneer. I'm just leaving it at that.
Yes, I will admit, I do like some of the English songs that were in Tenchi Muyo.
Mm-hmm.
They actually did a good job. Except for the karaoke ones that were in Tenchi Universe. But I think those were supposed to be intentionally bad.
I don't know. I think we should talk about that later. But I can understand why they changed the songs. Because if you pretty much in anime, so if you translate it to American titles, the lyrics... I don't think a lot of today's children or teenagers is going to get the song or understand it. Whereas you got to change it to a style that's going to put a butt in seats, you know?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of metaphors in the Japanese language that go over the heads of the American audience. And yes. Even that happens to me, too, when I'm watching an opening or closing theme and I'm reading the lyrics and I'm trying to piece together what it all actually means.
I mean, look at the opening and ending theme to the Japanese My Little Pony. The current Brony fandom is like, WTF? And I'll still say the Italian theme is the best one yet.
What is it like? My Little Pony, My Little Pony, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Is it something like that?
It's an original theme, and the music is really good.
Oh, okay. So it's not some stereotypical Italian sort of thing.
No, dude, I will send it to you later. It's really good.
Oh, okay.
That almost reminds me of like a lot of the Sailor Moon opening themes around the world. In America, when we got the Sailor Moon, our opening song took the same music as Moonlight Densetsu, but we just changed it to have it focus more on the actual heroine itself, because Moonlight Densetsu, it's a love ballad type situation kind of thing. But then you like go to Germany and like, yeah, this is like techno pop, man. And then like in the Cantonese version, like it's really badass. Like, yeah, we're the warriors. We're gonna kick your ass. And like, and there's like all these. And then the Tagalog translation, it's literal from the Japanese version. So, like, I always find it interesting, like how each country did all the music for Sailor Moon differently. And in America, one of the positive things about the North American version was we did get original music that in a few couple ways I thought was better than the Japanese, like in certain scenes, like in A Crystal Clear Destiny when Serena reveals herself to be the Moon Princess, I preferred My Only Love over Heart Moving, but that's just my personal preference.
I'm the same way, yeah.
I see what you're coming from. Like, Ray's Day in the Spotlight. I love the song that they had for her. And then when I discovered the Japanese version, I'm like, truth is, I could flip a coin no matter what side it turns. I would like either version from that. But as much when it comes to the original American music for Sailor Moon, Power of Love, you can't beat that.
Sorry, go on.
That makes you want to get up and just fight. I mean, like, you're just ready to just take on the whole...
We should note, we should note to our regular listeners that you're not talking about the Huey Lewis in the News Power of Love. This is an actual original different song called Power of Love.
Well, due to my interesting hookup here, I may be able to pipe it in for you guys so you can hear it.
Okay. All right. This should be interesting. Let's see if we can get this going.
All right. Sort by title. Come on, Winamp. You can do it for me. And here we go. See, forgive me if it's a little bit too loud.
All right. Wait, is Marky Mark?
Nope.
I was Barbie Girl.
Yeah, boy.
Gonna have a montage.
Especially goes up against the Grim Reaper guy.
Totally, like, just imagine all the pop singers on stage just dancing to this.
Yep. Yes, because here's the thing. As we know, when Sailor Moon came out, they put out Sailor Moon, Songs of the Hit TV series. Mm-hmm. And yes, I went out and bought that on cassette tape and CD.
Same.
Now, as you know, there were 17 episodes that were not aired here, but was aired on YTV. And what happened was they released a second album called Sailor Moon and the Scouts Lunar Rock. When those 17 episodes were aired here, they released the album here, and that's the title. That's the first track off that album.
Awesome. And I know it's probably out of print, right?
Yeah, I actually have both those CDs in storage somewhere, but if you know where to look, you can find digital releases of it.
Do you have it, like, at your bank in a little special lockbox so you could just go in there and visit them and just touch them, knowing that you're one of the few people in this country that has it?
Kind of, sort of, because when I moved out here, I still have some stuff in storage at a friend's house above his garage. And to get there, you have to go through all of these artwork pieces and sculptures, climb up the ladder, slip around the corner, flip the light on, all my stuff is there. So it's somewhere in there.
Is it booby trapped
too? Indiana Jones adventure.
Given that I have not been in that storage area in like maybe about 5, 6, 7 years, it probably is booby trapped by now.
Unintentionally. It's like you just push one thing and everything just falls on top of you. And 10 years later, they'll find your skeleton underneath a bunch of Sailor Moon DVDs and manga.
The DVDs, CDs, yes. Manga, not so much.
Oh, yeah, because you probably have, like, the new volumes that have come out, correct?
I do.
I have digital copies of them. I'm waiting for them to put out, like, the Uber box set. So my only ones I have individually are the Sailor V books for obvious reasons.
Obvious reasons.
What is this obvious reason?
I am a big Sailor V / Sailor Venus fan.
I will admit, Sailor Venus was my favorite one growing up, and, like, I used to pretend, like, I wouldn't say I created fan fiction, but I created a new mask character, and, like, his one would be the one to fall in love with Sailor V.
Ah. I remember when I started watching the series, it's like, I don't know who I like more, Sailor Moon or Sailor Venus, because they're both blondes. And I liked how they portrayed themselves. Then I watched PGSM, and I'm like, wow, Minako, you're such a bitch. I like you're my favorite Senshi.
Yeah, she was my absolute favorite, too. Who was your favorite growing up, Scarlet?
Growing up, my favorite was Sailor Mars because she was always passionate about what she always did. When DJ Ramas alluded to the O Starry Night episode where she's putting on the talent show, like, if you want a clear snapshot of, like, how I define myself, it's that episode, because sometimes I could relate to the girl who, like, works really hard but doesn't get a lot of credit for it. But
isn't that the episode where she covers that song by Wham, that Last Christmas one?
No, that was from the Christmas CD. They never they never sang, had a Christmas episode of Sailor Moon where they sing Christmas carols, but it's the one where she sings Oh Starry Night, and it's totally like your typical 90s love ballad kind of thing. And I like both versions too. And there's another song she sings in an episode. It totally sounds like the theme from Friends. Fun fact with Sailor Moon music trivia that I wanted to bring up. Stan Bush, the guy who sang some of the songs off the soundtrack for the animated Transformers movie, actually lended a track called She's Got the Power, which was featured in Sailor Moon R. Fun fact.
Wait, so the same guy who did the You Got the Touch, You've Got the Power, that guy?
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. Stan Bush. He sang She's Got the Power in Sailor Moon R.
Wait, I thought that was sung towards the end of the original when Serenity was fighting Beryl.
No, that's Give Me the Strength to Carry On, sung by Jennifer Chi-Chi, I think, who also does the Hot Pockets jingles.
The Hot Pockets jingles?
Hot Pockets!
Oh, God!
Now you're making me think of Jim Gaffigan right now because of that.
And I just had Hot Pockets before the podcast.
Ooh.
Actually, they're Lean Pockets. I'm trying to watch my figure.
Oh, yeah. I eat the Lean Pockets, too. But with us on the subject of Sailor Moon, when the new season comes out, like, what do you expect it to be? What do you hope this new Sailor Moon anime is going to be like?
Well, given what they're alluding to, my thoughts flashed back to Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon, where it was closer to the manga, and it went on to its own storyline. I expect the new series to be close to the manga as possible with the usual monster of the day. And I see them expanding on the storyline, because as I read the manga, I'm like, I understand all of this now, but there are some parts of the story where it's going a little bit too fast. Explain that in detail. I expect they should be able to knock out the revamp in about 130, 140 episodes tops.
So you think it's going to be that long of a series?
Pretty much.
Of course.
Okay.
Well, a lot of shoujo series aimed towards little girls do have like the longer episode runs. Like when a magical girl show that I'm currently watching right now, Aikatsu, it's running around 30 episodes currently, and I follow Precure a lot, and they usually average about 50 episodes a season. Yeah, while it is Monster of the Day, a lot of the shoujo done by Toei Animation, even if it's Monster of the Day, you still get a lot of character development, a lot of character interaction, and I don't mind that so much. I know like a lot of people do mind, but I also don't want to see them prolong like certain story arcs, like the Rainbow Crystal arc, or like, oh, we got to find this crystal MacGuffin thing of the day to find XYZ, which will unlock mysterious power thing. Because I felt like a lot of times it got to that direction where like nothing was really moving forward. Like, yeah, I did like seeing the inner Senshi do wacky hijinks. Like, that's always fun, but it just got to a point where I was like, this was really repetitive, and, you know.
And oh, then who winds up having it all along? It's Chibi Moon again.
Mm-hmm. I just finished revisiting Super S not too long ago. It's like, okay, Dream Mirrors, any minute now.
That's the one with the unicorn, right?
Yeah, it's someone where she's all like, dear Mr. Pegasus, today I learned.
Oh, which kind of sounds familiar about another show we're going to talk about.
Well, before we get into it, I just want to say one more thing about the revamp of Sailor Moon. Now, okay. From watching the anime, I see how each season ended and started up something new. As I read the manga, everything was like intertwined. Now, if I reveal a spoiler about Sailor Moon, too bad, because everybody knows it by now. I mean, in the manga,
I feel like everyone's born with the knowledge of Sailor Moon these days.
I mean, in the manga with Wise Man, Chibi Moon turned into Chibi Moon right then and there and helped Sailor Moon fight. She didn't get her Chibi Moon abilities until far into S. You see what I'm saying? A lot of stuff got intertwined. And if you notice at the end of Supers and Stars, Supers didn't finish like, what, 6-7 episodes into Stars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And one other thing I want to touch up on is the whole thing of, like, okay, so what usually draws me into the show, not just for Sailor Moon and everything, but it's theme song. Like, who are they going to get? And I'm a little bit upset that, considering how much a worldwide phenomenon that Sailor Moon is, that they're just going to get some crummy J-pop idol group to do it, and they're not going to try and get someone that, like, the whole world knows. Like, can you imagine if someone like Amy Lee from Evanescence was given a chance to do the theme song for Sailor Moon? I think she would hit it right out the ballpark.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I was talking with one of my other friends. Like, she and I think, I don't know if either of you have ever heard of a group called Apocalyptica.
I have.
Imagine if Apocalyptica and Amy Lee got together and did a Sailor Moon theme. Imagine how just epic that would be.
Given that the new Sailor Moon anime is going to be for mature audiences, as close as fucked up as the manga is, and they're going to animate that, them two doing the theme song would fit so well. That's pretty much saying, strap in. You ain't going anywhere for the next 30 minutes.
I would love to see them do like a battle theme for something like a darker arc, like the S arc, because, like, dude, yeah, Sailor Moon's fighting the Antichrist in that episode, in that arc, essentially. Like, I can totally see that happen. And people tend to forget, as shoujo-esque as Sailor Moon is, like, you revisit the manga and even the anime, and there's some, like, really dark points in there, the S season especially.
Absolutely. And I would think of more of like a band like Rammstein would do something to kick ass for one of those sorts of battles.
Yeah, because it's like, when I watched Madoka, after finishing it, I was like, what did I just read? I feel so... I feel so
a
violated.
Rob Zombie music video.
Yeah.
I felt so violated after watching Madoka, and then I read the Sailor Moon manga, and I'm like... Well,
they go hand in hand, really, honestly.
But I'm like, Madoka ain't got shit on this manga. I didn't think Naoko Takeuchi had it in her to do this. I'm like, done. Eternal Sailor Moon is our omnipotent being. All hail, praise be unto her.
I want to see a death match between Sailor Cosmos and Godoka. Watch that on pay-per-view.
Coming up on UFC 158, Sailor Cosmos and Madoka. Five rounds, 5 minutes. Anything goes.
No. Put them in TNA, six-sided ring, steel cage match, weapons around the cage. Yes.
With a hell of a cell on top of it.
God.
But yeah, you know, I'm hoping that the show does not get delayed anymore, that we see at least a teaser of it in the summer, with the first episode maybe premiering in September or October.
Well, that would be nice, but, you know, you would think that when they are announcing a new series or something like that, you would get teaser clips here and there. There hasn't been anything on teasers, and it's like Sailor Moon fans, well, they'll show it when they'll show it, because the thing is, nobody was expecting a reboot. Nobody was expecting it, so they're like, okay.
I kind of was. I was like saying, look, like, there hasn't been anything Sailor Moon related in years. 20th anniversary is coming up. Watch them announce something, and boom, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have that sort of mindset. I have a sinking suspicion that, because it's so impossible to license the old series, that the new series, that there's going to be a brand new one, and we're going to just eat it all up, and whoever's going to license it, Funimation, they're going to be the big, they're going to win that year for, like, best company.
Two things. The original series has been relicensed. Viz Media Europe has the license to the original 200 episodes in certain countries in Europe. And number two, I don't see Funimation getting near the new Sailor Moon anime, because Toei does have a U.S. arm sitting there doing various titles. So yeah, it's going to be a little difficult. And I find it funny that everyone's talking about, oh, Funimation's going to announce the series. Funimation's going to announce they're relicensing the series. It's like, one of the biggest, worst false rumors that are out there.
You see, you know what? I fell for that rumor. Like, I assumed that they had the license. They were just going to talk about it until they redubbed all 200 episodes. And they'll be like, oh, we've licensed Sailor Moon. The complete box set comes out in 2 weeks. That's what I was expecting to happen.
Yeah, there's like been a lot of speculation that Funimation has the license for all 200 episodes and the movies, but you know what? I've been doubting that for a while because I know Funimation, they have their own titles they need to take care of, and I could go on another tangent about this because I've been seeing a lot of similarities between Funimation and the rise and fall of ADV, but I see more of a company that has had a good history of handling like longer series like Viz, handling Sailor Moon, because they handled Nana. That was a pretty long series. They handled Ranma. They handled a lot of the older titles that go on for like hundreds of episodes, and I see them succeeding in that direction.
Well, I guess you could kind of give Funimation their props with Dragon Ball, you know, even though that's like one series, but still, you know.
Yeah, for them to still treat it the way they do, they treat it with love and care, even when Japan just keeps re-releasing, and they listen to the fans, and that's what I like about Funimation. They listen carefully to what the fan base wants.
No, I agree. I mean, there are people I know that don't like Funimation with their voice acting, how they do with.
I used to hate their voice acting, but now I really like them.
Yeah, they've learned from their mistakes. It's like when they licensed GXP and when the Uber screw up with one episode where the original cast makes an appearance in one episode. When that happened, the feedback was like, well, Funimation's like, my bad, we'll fix it. My bad, we fix it. And they've gotten better. So,
absolutely. So what are your final thoughts on this, Scarlett?
As far as Sailor Moon goes, definitely looking forward to it. Anime in 2013, I would like to stay positive, but definitely recommend Attack on Titan. And if for your for you shoujo aficionados, check out Aikatsu. It is awesome.
Okay, then. DJ Ranma?
I cannot wait for the new Sailor Moon new series. It's going to be well worth it. As for anime in 2013... I guess because I'm a little bit older and I'm along the lines of get off my lawn. if you have titles that you haven't finished watching, now would be a good time to do so, because it seems like any minute now there's going to be a title in 2013 everybody's going to go nuts over.
Absolutely. And I couldn't have said it better myself. Okay. Shall we move on to the next topic on hand?
Coonies.
Yes. So I never really get to talk about this on Boston Bass Brigade, especially when Balonic is here, but My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. I mean, this is a show where I initially tried avoiding it like the plague, because I remembered as a kid hating the original cartoon for it because my fourth grade teacher used to force us to watch it.
See, I didn't like MLP growing up because it was like... See, back in the day, you knew there was the cartoons for the boys, and then it was cartoons for the girls. It's like,
exactly.
Right after G.I. Joe was over, I turned it off because they would show Jim, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, because there was a very thick line between what was for boys and what was for girls back then. But now, with a show like My Little Pony: Friendship is Magic, not only has that line thinned out, but it's just been practically erased, you know?
Well, the line was already thinned out with the Powerpuff Girls. Because when I first found it, I'm like, what is this? And then some dude at the library who was printing out information, he's like, you gotta watch it. I'm like, alright, I'll give it a shot. I'm watching it, I'm like, whoa. And right on my desk is, no, on my table is Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup, all holding hands.
It was really the one of the first shows that really opened up my eye, and I used to watch it originally because I found it to be like a parody of the Japanese anime, you know, I saw the characters of Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup as sort of like the female versions of like Astro Boy of sorts. But then when you started watching this series, you find out that there's a lot more to it. There are more homages to it. There's a whole universe within the whole Powerpuff Girls that just mesmerizes me even to this very day.
Mm-hmm.
And now with a show like My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, that show's just gone beyond what people were expecting when it was first announced a couple of years ago.
See, when I first heard about it, I think it was my old roommate. He's like, "Have you seen this? Do you know what this is all about?" I'm like, "No." Title alone is like, "I'm not going to bother." He's like, it was either him or I kept hearing from other people, "It's really good." And I'm like, "Okay, fine, whatever." Get a hold of the first season. Watch the first episode. Nightmare Moon, the elements of harmony. Wait, is this like Sailor Moon? Shut up, take my money. Episode one watched. Episode two, what? Oh, this is awesome. Episode three.
This is funny.
I know, it's like, what is this? Did I get hit with a bait and switch? I was expecting more battles with the elements of harmony. By the time I got to episode six, trying to figure things out, I'm like, you know, this is a lot more cracked out than it should be. I'm so
exactly like when I first watched the episode, I was like, okay, this is all right, this is decent. Like, I'll just watch the first episode, and then that first episode turned out to be 13 episodes in a row, and I'm like, what the fuck just happened? How did I get sucked into this? And why do I have a big smile on my face after watching it?
Mm-hmm.
The way how I got to My Little Pony Friendship is Magic was through cosplay. I wasn't really aware of Friendship is Magic going on. I did have the Hub channel, but at the time I was I was in grad school, so I really had no time to catch up on anything new. I was kind of like out on the loop of with a lot of things, but I did see a lot of the My Little Pony memes pop up here and there, and I was just like to scroll through, move on with my life. But then we were doing fabric shopping back when I was living in LA. Two of my friends are like, "Yeah, we're gonna do My Little Pony cosplay," and then I'm like, "Okay, which one of you is gonna be the horse's ass?" Yeah, I have a sarcastic mouth sometimes, but that's language I speak. So, and I'm, and then I'm like, okay, I gotta probably check this thing out because I've been hearing like a couple of good things from it. One of my our site artist Deb, she actually sat down her MacBook right in front of me. It's like, okay, we're gonna watch the Elements of Harmony episodes. Okay. Eclipse. This is sounding a lot like Berserk. Yeah. And and then speaking of dark anime, and then like I was just like, I like the fact that they focus on six different ponies, because my critique with the original My Little Pony, like, yeah, I know it's a girl show, and I can make the same argument for Transformers and G.I. Joe, is when you had those episodes, they would like have an array of characters and you wouldn't really get to know them. That you really wouldn't develop, those characters wouldn't really get developed a lot. So when you have like a focus on like six characters and you develop them and you have them like go on these like fun adventures and shenanigans, like you really develop a liking to them, and a lot of people feel very attached to a pony in particular.
Yeah. And what I like about the show is the whole lesson aspect of the show, it isn't in your face. Like in the old My Little Pony cartoons, like the whole the morals and values of the show were like, you were basically like forced upon you, like Sharon is Karen, like every 5 seconds of the episode. But here in like Friendship is Magic, it's done in such a way that it's not, you don't learn the lesson until, not just until the end of like the show, but it's done in such a way that's like, yo, don't be a dick, sharing is caring. It's done in such a nonchalant way.
It's also done in a way too where it's like you said, it's not also force-fed because I felt like the second generation of My Little Pony was more of a perpetrator of that. Like, okay, like, so this episode, the character is very concerned about their looks. This episode, they're worried about hooking up with a certain pony, blah, blah, blah. Like, I know where this is going kind of thing. But in this one, like, these are lessons that I can show to, like, my niece or nephew or, like, any of my younger family members, and they can get into it. And, like, yeah, that actually makes sense.
I think it helps the fact that the show, like, isn't educational, but it's more geared towards life lessons than something that you can really learn in a book or at school.
Exactly. That's how I look at it, because you would think that if this show is geared more for girls, the situations would be like that, because if that was the case, we would have seen an episode about one of the a coming of age episode with one of the fillies. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But seeing the stuff on these episodes, it's like, damn, I've been there before. Or it's like, I know exactly what you're going through, bro. You know? Mm-hmm. It's like you said, real life lessons. And when you see a pony going through something that you have, you sit there and you cringe and you cover your eyes like you don't want to see the end results because you know it's going to happen, you know?
Right, because you have lived what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of my favorite episodes is the Twilight Sparkle freakout episode, Lesson Zero, because as a grad student, I've been there before, and like I've had that freak out. I had friends tell me, "Oh, don't worry about it." I'm like, "Of course I'm worried about it. You don't get me."
That's the one where it's like, "So, does anyone have any problems that need solutions to? Anybody? Anyone here?" That one?
Yes, that one. That's me during the last year of my grad school days.
I think that's the other thing, is like when the ponies go crazy, that's when the show reaches like its high hilarity. Like the episode where Pinkie Pie is hosting a party and no one shows up, and she starts talking to rocks.
Or the episode with the two-parter wedding episode, Royal Wedding, where Pinkie Pie, I believe she grabbed another Pinkie Pie and started using it as a submachine gun.
Yep.
I want a party cannon.
That's the one it was, the party cannon.
Say hello to my little friend!
And what's great about the show, too, speaking of like those final episodes of the season, the music, the songs. These aren't like the crappy ones we remember as kids. These are like Broadway musical numbers that will win tons of Tony Awards if it was actually brought onto stage. That's how good the music is on this show.
And I believe the composer, one of the songs actually got nominated for a Daytime Emmy.
Did it win?
Do you know which one?
Behold, Internet, I will find out.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was the whole, what was it, the magical... What was the title? Magical Mystery Tour? Something having to do with something Beatles related.
Let's see. I forget which one that is, but if we're while DJ Rama is looking up informations, my favorite still has to be the Pinkie Pie Smile song. It's the episode. That's still my favorite one of them all. And during the summer, I was actually mentoring a lot of youth that came from like underprivileged backgrounds, and that was like my teacher mentor theme song to myself. Like, I want to make you guys smile today.
You know what I love about with the Pinkie Pie song? Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of a musician by the name of Amanda Palmer. She was in a band called the Dresden Dolls a while back.
Yes,
I've heard of them.
I would love to see her do a whole cover album of Pinkie Pie songs, because I think she would be total badass at it.
Well,
Andrew WK too help out as well.
Oh yeah, and throwing a little bit of John DeLancey just for class.
Yes, the fact that Andrew WK spoke at a My Little Pony convention shows how deep the reach is to the fan base of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
I'll say this much. When MC Chris said that he was a brony Phantom was like, okay, and you know, you're not doing us any favors. Andrew WK, I'm a Brony fan. Thank you, based Andrew WK, you know?
Yeah. Cause he relates to Pinkie Pie's partying. And partying is like his meta. It's his thing. So he can look at Pinkie Pie and be like, okay, I see Pinkie Pie in me because I am all about the partying. I party hard and we party all the time.
And when it comes to the Daytime Emmys, two songs were nominated, Becoming Popular and Find a Pet.
I love the Find a Pet song, but I like both of them. I love them all.
Yeah. Has anyone noticed the similarities between the Bab Seed song and the Sugar Rush song from Wreck-It Ralph, by the way?
I actually did hear that when I was listening to that song for the first time. I was working on building my headboard for my bed. It's like, wait, this sounds familiar.
I think this one is an absolute coincidence because both the songs were written at the same time. And so it would be impossible for one show to know what the other one was going to be doing.
Exactly. I do remember I listened to a bunch of remix NLP songs on my phone, and I forget the song, but there's a certain part of the song that reminds me of Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back. It's the beat to it, and I'm like, and I hear the lyrics going through, and it's like, it fits. Holy shit, it fits.
And that's another amazing thing is the fan creations that come out of the fandom of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. The Pokemon battles with ponies and
Ponymon.
Ponymon. Epic Pie Time. I think my favorite so far, there's this fan-made pony someone made called Fluffle Puff. I don't know if either of you have ever heard of this. Have either of you have ever heard of Fluffle Puff?
Nope.
Okay. I am going to quickly see if I can find a video of this so people can understand how awesome Fluffle Puff is. I'll post it onto the website. There's a link right down there in your Skype right there. Click on it and just watch how just hilarious this is, and I guarantee you by the end of this video you will want this character to be canon.
Sort of like Derpy Hooves,
Dr. Hooves.
The drama behind that, she got renamed back to Ditsy Doo or something like that. I don't know if it, but
we still call her Derpy.
Is it bad that I originally thought that Derpy was a boy?
I kind of thought that too, especially with the haircut and the attitude. But I thought it was great when they brought Derpy in as canon. But I was pissed off when they took her away from it as well.
Well, I got the video playing in the background. It's pretty cool.
You get what I'm talking about with this Fluffle Puff character?
Yes, I do. Now, to flip back to you and Scarlett mentioning Smile, Smile, Smile and the various remixes, let me ask you, how would you feel if you heard this while you're driving down the road?
It's a chiptune remix.
Something like that. It's by King Sparta X37. It's called Rainbow Road, Pinkie Pie's True Smile Remix.
I kind of want to para-para to this.
I will send you the song later.
Next week, so I'm like, okay, driving music, yeah.
And what I think is so great about the fandom is like Hasbro and the Hub, they're embracing it. They're not going out to YouTube and going banning this video because it's taking our license. They're going, this is awesome. Let's get it out there more.
They had to invoke the license once.
It was for the Fighting is Magic, I know, which was sad. I was really hoping that they were going to allow that. But at least there's something good coming out of that with Lauren Faust coming on board to help out with the building of this new game based on it.
Yes.
But for the most part, like, Hasbro has been fully supported. There's just been probably tens of thousands of these fan creations, and they're doing such a great job with promoting it that sometimes a lot of these fans will luck out and it becomes canon. And I think that's great when they are able to do something like that.
Well, there is an actual fan-made episode of MLP.
There is.
Yeah, it came out of SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design. Bunch of fans together and did it. And it was a crossover with Powerpuff Girls, since they're not too far from Cartoon Network Studios, more or less, you know?
Right. Well, Lauren did help out with Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and she is married to Craig McCracken.
Yeah, and people wonder where all of this came from, you know?
Yeah. It's the animation power duo right then and there.
And I actually watched this episode, this fan-made episode. Yeah, it's called Double Rain Boom. We're on par. It just felt like they were trying to force this down your throat in a way of, this is an original episode. We can do it just as good as the studios. We can do better. This is what we can do. You know, that's how it came off to me, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like to see them do another episode, but kind of scale back on the ego tripping and everything that they put into it. And then it may come out to be a lot better. But other than that, I really wouldn't watch it again.
Okay. Well, you'll have to link me later on so I can check it out. But while we're on the subject of, like, these different aspects of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, I know that there's something that just recently came out that they announced that we're kind of, I don't know if we want to say we're not happy about this or we want to say we're on the fence about. And it's this Equestria Girls thing.
Why?
So you two are on the this should not exist, burn it, burn it, burn it bandwagon, I take it.
Yes.
Yeah, let me just start off with this. So Equestria Girls, Hasbro teased us with a photo of all the girls of all the main six in human noid form, and by humanoid they have like their skin color is the same as their main body, so like Twilight Sparkle purple skin, and they look more like human ponies and ponies as I don't know what to say,
it's humans.
Where to say this. Yeah, I mean, it's like it reminds me of Monster High, kind of, with all the different skin tones and whatnot. And I think that's what they were trying to go for. But at the same time, I'm looking at these character designs and just the way they drew the main six as humans, quote unquote. And I'm like, I've seen cosplayers do better interpretations of the main six. And I've been having this conversation with, like, a lot of my staff on Scarlet Rhapsody. It's like, you know, I'm just looking at this. Rainbow Dash would not wear something like that. And that's, like, the power of fandom right there. When you just look at something and you're all like, yeah, I've seen fans put on better interpretations of human ponies as the whole main six Equestria Girls designs, and like, oh, it's now gonna jump the shark.
Not only does it jump the shark, but it just it M. Night Shyamalan's itself.
It jumped the shark, avoided the brick wall, and slammed into a dimensional rift.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
When I first heard about this, I thought at first it was being a new Flash animation TV show on the hub. That's what
I thought too.
That's what I thought too. I thought it was going to be like a spin-off series, but the fact that it's a movie, I don't think it's going to be that good. In my opinion, they should do a regular My Little Pony Friendship is Magic film and get some really badass people to guest in the film as well. Because I think they could do a better, more fuller story in a movie than they could probably do in a two-part episode.
Now, by movie, is this going to be released in theaters, or is this going to be like a direct-to-video? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and it's going to be released in theaters next month.
Well, I may have to go see this. Now, mind you, the reason why I have to see this is because I have a friend who has a daughter. We have a running thing of I'm Artemis, she's Luna, and her daughter is Diana. It's like, by that law, because I am dad, I have to go to see the movie.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you could talk me into seeing it. I really, as much as a fan I am of Friendship is Magic, I don't think I could actually stomach seeing this. And watch me say this, and then me watch it later, and watch it be awesome. Watch it actually be really good.
See, because the thing
I'm waiting for the fan edit.
See, the fandub parody.
Like fandub parodies, MST3 versions.
With Team Four Star doing it, and have like the voice of Nappa as the voice of Fluttershy.
Oh God!
There you go. Like. Fluttershy just being stuck in that Zecora spell the whole time. That'd be funny. But, like, it's, I don't know. It's just, like, the type of thing where I just see myself maybe watching when the movie comes out on Netflix or home video or on demand. And I get a group of friends and we just watch it and just have a few drinks that just make the fun out, riff the shit out of it.
That happens.
So, yes, that's a great idea. I would love to do, like, a Mystery Science Theater 3000 with it.
I'm coming over. I'm bringing the Blue Moon.
The Blue Moon?
Best beer I've ever had.
Okay. Maybe we actually should plan something like this in the future.
We should do a live episode of it.
Yeah, we should. I think that would be awesome. Okay, DJ Ranma, I think next time you're in Boston, and if this is actually out on video or some way, shape, or form by that time, I think the three of us should get together and do it.
I like the sound of that.
You like the sound of that?
I love when we play together.
Okay. So, to close this topic of Friendship is Magic, what do you hope Season 4 is going to bring to the franchise? Do you think Twilight Sparkle is going to continue being the Alicorn Princess, or do you think she's actually going to lose the powers and become a regular pony again?
There are fans, especially on my Facebook, who are demanding that Twilight Sparkle lose her Alicorn abilities. And to everybody else, I'm like, you mad, bro?
See, it could go either way. I mean, this could actually be a really cool twist on Friendship is Magic. Now, let's see how Twilight Sparkle has to go through life with the troubles of being a princess. It's not about, you know, being pretty and all that stuff. There's a lot of shit she has to do now. There's a lot of rules she's going to follow. There's a lot of laws that she's going to help pass. There's going to be a lot of political stuff that happens in this cartoon now, I bet you.
Well, I'll say this. When they pronounced Season 3 and they said, pretty much that Twilight Sparkle's going to step up, I'm like, hell yeah. Watching all the episodes, I'm like, okay, I don't see anything pointing to the fact that she's going to step up until that last episode where they dropped the ball and just said, because of this, she now has princess status. And I was very happy because Twilight Sparkle is my home pony. But as I watched episodes again and I'm thinking back and I'm like, well, I have to agree with the fandom where it just happened out of the blue. They never alluded to anything. If anything in the fourth season, I see her still being an Alicorn, but still living in Ponyville, helping her friends. She's going to be like that one princess that's for the people, you know, something like
right.
that.
Right. She's going to get her hooves dirty, basically. She's not going to be like, oh God, I can't believe I'm forgetting the main princess's name right now.
Celestia?
Thank you. Princess Celestia.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Massive brain fart right there. She's not going to be like Princess Celestia where she's just going to be watching everything from her castle. She's going to get down and dirty with the problems that are going to be happening.
Gotcha. Okay.
My hopes are season four. Well, the thing is, I'm also keeping up with the comic continuity. The first arc deals with Princess Chrysalis and all the changelings, and that was a really interesting story arc. And there's also a cameo by Optimus Prime. If you look for it, it's there.
wait, stop. What?
Okay, so in the IDW publication of Friendship is Magic, Optimus Prime, there is an Optimus Prime cameo. You just gotta look for it. It's somewhere like between issue 2 and issue 3. There's also one shots of each of the ponies getting like their own issue, like the Twilight Sparkle and Rainbow Dash one. Those have recently came out, and Rarity is my favorite, so I'm totally waiting for her one shot to come out, and I'm really hoping. At one point or another, and I don't know how you'd be able to do it now that Twilight Sparkle has Princess status, but a lot of the one-shot stories are pretty good.
I think I found the picture.
Well, you're starting to get all robotic on us.
Is that the one?
Yep, that's one. Let me just open up this whole thing and do load. Yes, that's the scene where Optimus Prime has a cameo. Because IDW also does the Transformers comics.
So, with season four, I do hope that we're going to see more the characters evolve. Do you think the Cutie Crusaders will actually finally get their cutie marks, or do you think that's just going to be one massive running gag throughout the entire series?
I always seen it as a running gag throughout the series. Yeah. Like at this point in time, we already know what their talent is, and like what the cutie mark could be, Sweetie Belle obviously singing. Yeah, but my hopes are season four. I just hope they just keep the whole, just keep the humor, keep the shenanigans up.
Okay, I agree. By the way, am I sounding a little bit better right now with the mic?
Absolutely, you sound back to normal.
Okay, good. Something must have happened with the cord, so.
Okay.
All right, so on that note, should we stick a fork into this podcast episode?
Yeah, sure.
There's cake.
Yep. Oh, yes. We got strawberry cake.
I'm down for that.
Just remember, the cake may be a lie, but the pie is always constant.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Pie. For the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bash Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade. I'm on Twitter at king_baby_duck. We are on b3crew.tumblr.com. And you can also write to us at thebastards@BostonBashBrigade.com.
Impressive, good sir.
Thank you. We're doing it for over 180 episodes. I could do it in my sleep.
I hear that. Okay, I'll go next. Yep. You get my podcast, Anime Jam Session. We record live Tuesdays at 9:30 p.m. on Vogue Network at voguenetwork.com, and with encore episodes Thursdays at 1:30. If you happen to miss those, episodes will go online through animejamsession.com, and we're on iTunes.
All right, I guess it's my turn. Scarlet Rhapsody, you can read our convention reports at scarlet-rhapsody.com. We also run an anime conventions podcast called Zero Hour, and you can find that on iTunes and on our website. You can follow us on Twitter at Scarlet Rhapsody, and you can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/scarlet-rhapsody.media. And check us out at Boston Comic Con, because we'll be there.
And you'll also be at Anime Boston this year, right?
Oh, that's right. I meant to say Anime Boston, but Boston Comic Con, like, that's just been on my mind lately with the date change.
Yeah, because of everything. But yeah, we'll definitely have to do something at Anime Boston this year, you and I, and with all the other crew that's going to be there, too.
Cool. Yeah, I'll be participating in Masquerade, so check that out. I'll be Princess Yukiko from the Persona 4 game. I got to fix up the petticoat by the end of the evening, so that's what I'll be doing after this podcast.
Awesome. And DJ Ranma, what's the next convention people can see you at?
Well, my next appearance was supposed to be Animazement, but because of moving to a new location and school that con money has been rearranged, so I will not be at Animazement this year, but they can find me at, actually, I'll be at CloverCon, which is like in 2 weeks, followed by Anime Next in June, which is a great con. Y'all need to come check it out.
Awesome. So, yep, and I've mentioned I'll be at Anime Boston, and I will also be at E3 mid-June, so you can probably find me on there on the floor chatting with a bunch of the developers there. I think the three of us together, we're going to have a lot to cover. We're going to see a lot of great shit happening. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Got that right.
Awesome. So, thank you again, DJ Ranma. Thank you again, Scarlett. Until next time, this is King Baby Duck reminding you, you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps.